Houston Authority meeting to order. Eric, will you make sure we have a quorum, please?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, Commissioner Campo is here. Commissioner Clunan.
Here.
Commissioner Corgi. Commissioner Cruzo.
I'm here.
Commissioner Don Carlos.
Here.
Commissioner Fitzgerald.
I'm here.
And Commissioner Meese.
I'm here.
Welcome all. We have a
Okay, great. Thanks, Eric. I appreciate commissioners being here and all the other folks that are on this WebEx call. So let me just start and give you a brief update of what's been going on at the port for the last month since we have been since our last meeting. So in our April meeting, we acknowledged and celebrated Infrastructure Week and highlighted the importance of the continued investment in infrastructure improvements for the efficient movement of freight, not only for our port, but for the national economy. We followed up with the groundbreaking of the Beltway 8 property, which will serve as a critical area for dredge placement for Project 11. So this was the first groundbreaking of Project 11. We're really excited about that. We also released an op-ed piece that was distributed across several media outlets, stressing the importance and the need for infrastructure. And while we're talking about infrastructure, just a quick update on Project 11. We continue our project, our progress, the detail, including completions of several design aspects. We're now at 100% completion, and we're undergoing our constructability reviews by the Corps of Engineers, and they have advanced several specific development tasks related to the relocation of pipelines, oil facilities, and are addressing minor real estate issues. We remain on track to sign a project partnership agreement with the Army Corps. Currently, it's planned for the last week of June. On a note, tomorrow, May 26th, our Project 11 team will conduct its third industry day, which is a continuation of our outreach to the dredging industry to ensure that our supplier base maintains full awareness of the project schedule and will be ready and will be ready to efficiently propose on the Project 11 contracts when they are put out for proposals. But infrastructure is not the only thing in the spotlight. Just over a week ago, we celebrated National Police Week. This week, the week of recognition was established in 1962 to pay tribute to law enforcement officers who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Police are a critical part of the port. The Police Week concluded with a Police Officer Memorial Day on May 15th, which was observed by displaying the flag at half staff in all government buildings. These observations hold special meaning to Port Houston police officers who risk their lives to protect and serve the people and the commerce of the port. Our dedicated colleagues in the police in the Port Police work hard every day to keep our people and our operations safe. Port Police, we thank you for your dedicating your lives to protecting and serving the port, and we remember fallen officers with you this week. And we continue to drive excellence in environmental sustainability leadership. Our sustainability action team is executing its plan to engage stakeholders to gauge opportunities for additional projects that can support our sustainability goal through environmental, social, and governance, or ESG initiatives. We have reached out to over 80 stakeholders across a broad spectrum of interest, including our neighboring citizens and community organizations, environmental advocates, industry ship channel users, beneficial cargo owners, vessel owners, and sustainability-focused representatives of our city, county, and academia. About 50 have RSVP'd for workshops to be held the first week of June. These round one workshops have the primary purpose of listening to stakeholders while evaluating dozens of ideas in the ESG area with the aim to understand better what the port might take the lead on. Where we may efficiently partner or where the port can support. So it really is about trying to figure out where the port can play. And we are committed to funding to these projects as well. Our team will collate the round one findings and conduct a second round of workshops later in June to coalesce around possible recommendations. And finally, they will review the outputs with a smaller board of senior advisors to validate the recommendations before reporting back to our Port Commission in our July Community Relations meetings. It's appropriate for the Port Commission today to discuss our DEI statements. You'll see it on the agenda, and Roger's going to talk about that here in a minute. Today happens to be the one-year anniversary of the death of George Floyd. And as we said multiple times since that tragic death a year ago, Port Houston is committed to racial equity and inclusion in all of our port activities, not only our employees, but also suppliers and people and companies that touch Port Houston. Memorial Day is upon us. It's amazing how fast time flies. As we enter another summer, let us not forget to honor and mourn the military personnel who have died during the performance of their military duties while serving the United States Armed Forces during this Memorial Day weekend. And I thank all of our team at Port Houston, all our military folks that work at Port Houston and around Port Houston, and all of our team. You've done a great job coming through the pandemic, and we really appreciate all of the team members every single day. At this point, that concludes my comments. So let's move towards item C1, which is the approval of our minutes from our April 27th meeting. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Hearing we're going to take negative votes again, as we have done since we've been virtual. So are there negative votes on this? Hearing none, the motion passes. We'll move on then to item D1, staff reports. Roger, I think you have the floor.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Chairman. Good morning, commissioners and guests. Thanks for everybody being there with us this morning. A few highlights, you know, talk a little bit about our cargo operations following a strong month in March. Our activity across our public facilities remains solid. Well, remember, just a year ago, our container volume was falling quite rapidly due to the pandemic, followed by several lean months with double-digit declines in our volume. So it's not surprising that this April is 25% more volume than last April. But, you know, comparatively, the year's strong. The import demand is still high. The export demand, a lot of petrochemicals, plastics that are dependent upon that. Are starting to recover, but our volume is up 3% for the year, which we're in a good spot, and imports and exports look to remain solid at least through the better part of this year. So I think, you know, the year's going to continue to be a good one. For general cargo, our multi-purpose facilities are up 7% over last year. I think I got a pretty good report yesterday from Randy and his group about a good projection of steel that's going to occur here, you know, through the month of May. There's a lot of steel activity, also a lot of plywood ships that are working at the city docks as well. So something that we hadn't seen in a while. So we see that trended upward and recovering. And overall, our cargo is on track and generally in going in a great direction. Just a couple other tidbits about that. We have a new service starting next month. I think it's tentatively the ETA is expected on June 3rd, 13th. It is an alliance called The Alliance. Several of our major container carriers are part of that, but we're expecting the first ship, the ONE Moderna, which represents, it'll be our fifth all-water direct Asian service calling Port Houston now. I can remember not, you know, more than a decade ago or so, we had zero. So it continues to grow. These will be vessels in the 7,000 TEU range. Ships are getting bigger, and it provides for new business opportunities. This is new business. And new opportunities for import and export for our BCOs and our shippers of products through our terminal. So we're really excited about that. And on top of that, we're continuing to make investments in our capital plan to stay ahead of the demand. Just yesterday, we issued the notice to proceed for Wharf 6 at Bayport that we've already built yard space behind that. So this continue to grow to be able to serve our customers with the larger ships. And we're also getting new cranes. The update on that is October with three new cranes scheduled to come to Bayport. So a lot of things on the plate, and we'll keep you apprised as we continue. One other thing, I know a lot of you have asked, and a lot of people have asked about our status for returning to the office. For those that have been telecommuting during the pandemic, you know, people talk, when you return to work, we're not returning to work. We never left work. We're returning, we're reuniting. We worked very well during the pandemic, but we're looking forward to getting back together in a collaborative environment. We're beginning to phase it back in. We're going to take a methodical approach, do it in a manner that's safely while maintaining the safety protocols. We're in now, several of us, a couple days a week right now. We got a new phase coming in mid-June, and we're going to take it step by step to make sure that we're getting everybody back the right way and back in business. But the last thing I want to talk about, take a little bit of time about our continued priority on one of our strategic priorities. As you know, Port Houston's strategic plan includes fostering the diversity, equity, and inclusion within our organization. It's part of our people goal that's been in there for 2 years, and to become the best place to work. And we've ramped up our DEI efforts beginning last summer with our needs to communicate. It was heightened a little bit. Rick mentioned this 1 year for the George Floyd death. So we've been doing roundtable discussions attended by more than 100 employees. We rolled out mandatory training on inclusive leadership for our senior staff and working on organization training program. And we've formed an internal cross-function diversity, equity, and inclusion team that's been meeting regularly and making sure that we're have the efforts in the forefront and ongoing develop for a DEI plan. So all this is in motion, but we understand that the importance of DEI goes beyond our internal culture. Just to recap, as a leader of commerce and activity in the most diverse city in the U.S., we have a duty to promote this DEI throughout the region. And just to recap, you know, we had the disparity study. We've reformed the Port Commission's procurement and small business development task force as a business equity committee. We adopted the minority and women-owned business enterprise policy and amended the small business policy with aggressive goals for participation. And we've created a strategic marketing plan to get the word out to the community. So we're doing a lot of things. But all these steps that we've taken up to this point really kind of give us a running start for a couple of big leaps that I want to talk about. First, we have a draft of the Port Houston Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Position Statement on today's docket for adoption. This came out of the DEI group working team that that has been meeting and working. It's actually item F1 on the agenda today, but it's meant to be a beginning, continuance. It's not the end, it's the beginning. It's a first step with a forward-looking declaration and an internal mantra capturing the vision for DEI at Port Houston. So the statement reads, you probably have it in front of you, diversity, equity, and inclusion. These principles are interwoven with Port Houston's core values and will become part of our fabric and foundation. We're committed to doing what's right with our organization and throughout our community. So it's just something to continue to build our culture, working together as a great team and a family, and to be in a great place to work and recognize our diversity as a workforce. But the second thing I want to talk about, and Rick, that's up again, that's item F1, whenever you want to take that up. But the last thing I want to mention is I'm excited to announce that we'll be adding, we heard about it last month with the new business equity policy. We're going to be adding a new business equity division to our organization with a new chief officer reporting directly to me. The new division will provide vision and leadership and guidance for Port Houston's diversity with a focus on promoting equity and enhancing opportunity both internally and externally. Taking this step will elevate the profile of DEI at Port Houston, ensuring that we have the organizational weight and the leadership to produce this meaningful and sustainable change. The new division will absorb what is currently the Small Business Department, while Education Outreach will be relocated into the Community Relations Department, marrying up this maritime education program and our community engagement efforts, which I think belong together, and with a focus on business equity and our MWBE and SBE program and diversity, all things diversity in one location. So we're moving that thing around, but I think it'll be an absolute plus for the organization. So there's a lot of things going on. It's an exciting time, Port Houston. I'm proud to be a part of the team working to make our corner of the world a better place for generations to come. So a little lengthy there, but some important stuff, and I'm excited about where we're going. So thank you, Chairman.
Thanks, Roger.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask Roger a question?
Chris.
Can I ask
go ahead, Clyde.
Rog, the new cranes, how many across is it going to reach? Do you know? 21, 20?
I think the number's 22 wide is the biggest good one that that they make.
Right.
I don't know, Jeff or Paula or somebody can correct me, but in general, yeah, it's the biggest crane. And they're going to be the tallest cranes in our fleet.
Okay. And the second thing I want to say is I think last weekend we had 6,000 moves on one vessel, which has got to be a record for port. Is that correct?
I'm not sure about that. I haven't heard that. I know we're hitting record in there for a while. We're having records as the ships get bigger, but also we're having record gate moves at our facilities as well for a daily truck move. So there's a lot of records going on out there.
Mr. Chairman, we've got to continue working to get them big ships in here.
Yes, sir.
I know you know that.
I do.
Okay.
Roger, any other questions, commissioners? Roger, go ahead.
Quick question. So I was wondering the same thing as Clyde on the width there. What's the beam on those ships, Roger?
Well, the beam on the ones that are coming in with this new service?
On the new cranes.
Oh, the new cranes, you know.
What beam will they handle?
Yeah, they'll certainly handle the, you know, everything we're designing around is Neo-Panamax, which is basically 168-foot beam. Okay. You know, the biggest ship can come through the Panama Canal.
That's great.
But, you know, I'm not sure that the cranes are even, I think they may be wider than that, but at least we're buying these cranes for a long period. And we it's incrementally the cost of buying them, you know, with the outreach that we may need 25 or 30 years from now.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Any other questions, commissioners? I have a question, Roger, while commissioners think maybe. So you talked about how our volumes are up 3% and we're, you know, commerce is continuing to catch up with you know, what happened last year. I know that I get a lot of questions about how long will it take for the supply chain to get back to normal? You know, when you think about what happened during the pandemic, we had, 40 or 50 blank sailings that happened through the summer of last year. And what happened basically was people drew down their inventories. And because factories weren't producing goods during that period of time, there was no ability for people to reload their inventories. And I think part of the reason you're getting plywood delivered to the port when we did in the past was that there's a massive lumber shortage. Price of lumber has doubled over the last 6 months. For example, the a truss set for a single family home in the last 6 months has gone from $11,000 to $40,000, primarily because of lack of supply. And so how long do you think, and are you hearing from the customers that are bringing in the inventory and these kinds of products, how long is that supply chain going to continue to be sort of blocked up with people trying to resupply inventory and shortages?
Well, the The belief is it's going to carry on through the end of the year. There's, you know, no end in sight from what we tell, you know, and even on the lumber side, a lot, part of the congestion and the reason there's lumber on break bulk ships is because in a, unavailability of containers, empty containers, they're all going back to Asia to reload with e-commerce products that people are buying on Amazon. So they can import them back to the U.S. more quickly. So I'm telling you, we're hearing that, you know, not only is the import market going to continue to be strong, you know, I think the export of the petrochemical products that are made here are going to continue to ramp up. And, you know, so stay tuned. I think it's going to be continue to grow through the better part of this year, at least.
It's unfortunate that you didn't give us better news on that. I know it's going to be great for Port Houston and great for the ship channel and all, with all the, you know, the longshoremen and everybody who moves all those products. But unfortunately for the end consumer who wants to buy a car or a house or something like that, it's really tough and prices spiking and really difficult to get, you know, basic things you need. So unfortunately, I think you're right. I think it's going to be at least the end of the year and maybe even through the middle of next year. So a year to a year and a half to really get back to a normal situation, which is obviously good for our business.
But it's good for Houston because, you know, there's a tremendous demand. You know, we're able to do it. We don't have the congestion. You know, we're able to continue to import and export goods out here without some of the issues that we're having in other parts of the world, a very rapid growth. So I think it's good news.
Oh, no question. It's good for people in this business, bad for consumers. Okay. So with that, any commissioners, any other comments or questions for Roger? Okay, let's move on to then the next item on the agenda, which is our public comment section. And so I see we have three speakers. We have Christina Zatopik from the East Harris County Empowerment Council. I see you in my right corner, Christina. So if you can get after it.
Perfect. Thank you guys so much for having me today. So I'm here today to ask you to deny the licensing for the ITC installation of the 12-inch methanol pipeline as per agenda item 10 under permits, licenses, and pipeline easements. ITC has not been a good neighbor, and they should not be rewarded for continuous poor behavior. It is not a secret that ITC has a long history of EPA infringements and failed inspections. And I'd love to say that they've changed their direction since the explosions of March of 2019 that caused a shutdown of multiple businesses and forced many residents from their homes. However, they have not. ITC's current EPA compliance status is high priority violation. Every quarter since April of 2020 through June of 2021, they've received high priority CAA violations as well as a RCRA violation in quarter 10 of 2020. Considering the port strategy for to evolve your DEI impact, it should be considered that ITC is in a 40% POC community as well. And so finally, I just request on part of our combined communities and the continued bad neighbor behavior on the part of ITC that you deny the licensing of this pipeline.
Okay. Any commissioners, any questions? Thank you. All right. Okay, our next speaker is – go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was asking Roger if he had any comment or any follow-up on that comment made.
Roger?
Well, just a couple of things, and thanks for your comment. You know, this is pretty routine stuff for, you know, license these pipelines, and certainly as our authority, you know, our responsibilities as the Port Authority, we certainly don't look at it as a reward for anything. But I don't know that there's been any issues that constitute or give us any reason to deny that on, you know, just from a reasonable ability for, you know, for facilities like this to need to do business. So I don't I don't have anything other to share other than I just
let me ask something, Roger. So the Port Houston is a lot of people confused about what Port Houston does, right? And so we do two things. One is we're the non-federal sponsor of the channel. So when it gets deepened and widened and any kind of thing that goes on with that, we're the partner with the Corps of Engineers to get that done. And that's federal law. The second thing we do is we operate the public docks, right? There are 8 public docks. There are over 200 other users of the port, and the leasing of land or pipeline licensing is a perfunctory part of our job, and we are not an entity that enforces environmental law or any kind of activity that anybody does in the channel is not in the Port Authority's purview of its responsibilities. The responsibility for environmental compliance and enforcement is primarily the Coast Guard and the state of Texas, and then probably some county and city regulations that are involved in the cities around. So unfortunately, it's not part of the port's sort of wheelhouse to enforce things or to decide whether a company is good, bad, or indifferent in their ability to access the public resources, which include pipelines and other parts of the port. So unfortunately, it's just not part of our job. And, you know, if it was, we might have a different view of it, but it's just not. So we have to provide a fair and reasonable process for all users of the channel, whether it be a pipeline license or any other thing that we kind of deal with. So that I would just add that to Rogers. And any commissioners, any other comments or questions?
Chairman, I have a comment.
Yes, go ahead.
You know, it is in our wheelhouse to create and promote jobs in the region. That's part of our mission here. And it would seem to me if we denied this license, that people could lose their jobs. And I think that goes against the grain with what we try to do here. And it's unfortunate everything that happened out there at IEC, and hopefully that will never happen again. But again, I'm concerned something like this could cost people their jobs. And I think that's not what we need to be doing. Thank you.
Roger, is this an existing pipeline or new? Just a renewal of a permit, or are they going to install a pipeline, or is this existing? Do you know?
Rich, can you answer that, or Tom? I know it runs along a PTRA corridor.
It's a new pipeline.
Roger, it's a new one.
That's a new pipeline.
Okay, any other comments, commissioners?
Put it in. Does any of our people go out there to inspect it to be sure it's been put in where it's supposed to be and all of that?
Yeah. It runs along a PTRA spur, and so both PTRA and we have looked at it. And they haven't built it yet since the license isn't issued.
The question is, will we look at it, Rick?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay, so let's move on to our second speaker, Stephanie Thomas, with the Public Citizen. Stephanie, I don't see you, but hopefully you can connect in. Stephanie, are you there?
I see her on the screen, but
yeah, can you all see me?
Yes, we see you. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I just wanted to make a couple comments about the port's DEI plan. I appreciated seeing that in the agenda today, and I appreciated the piece of the statement that. The port is committed to doing what's right within our organization and within our community. So I think it seems like this is a good first step. And I have to say, I do have some questions coming up from the last comment as well. I understand what you all are saying about this being a perfunctory part of the court's job. I also feel like there is some room here to consider what is in the best interest of people, both people who may be seeking jobs as well as community members. Thank you.
Commissioners, any comments or questions? Thank you. I really appreciate your comments, and I think that in a broader, maybe in some of the ESG conversations we're having, maybe there is some room to have a broader conversation about some of the issues that are being brought up today on what the port's real responsibility, or maybe even an expanded responsibility, could be with respect to our own properties and our licenses and things like that. And I think, however, until we have a policy or a review of that activity, I think it would be very difficult for us to change our policy in midstream when people are used to the business that we've been doing going forward. So, but I do think that in these, hopefully, Stephanie, you're in the part of the our ESG meetings or our sustainability meetings here in the next week or so, and we can discuss those kind of items. All right, our next speaker is Bay Scoggins with the Texas Public Interest Research Group. I think I see you up there, Bay.
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me?
Morning. I can.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Chairman and Commissioners. I appreciate you having me here today. As you said, I'm the director of TexPIRG, the Texas Public Interest Research Group. We're a consumer advocacy and public interest organization. And we've done a lot of research on buses. And Stephanie tells me that y'all are considering a new shuttle bus for the Bayport Terminal. And I just wanted to come give you some extra information that I thought might be helpful. The key thing that I want to say to you today is that zero emissions buses right now, electric buses right now, are actually reaching cost parity. By our own research, in terms of a total cost of ownership model, meaning over the lifetime of the bus, how much is this bus going to cost you? Each electric bus that you purchase will save you $200,000. So I just want that to sink in, because it's hard to get our heads around that, because the initial price point is significantly higher, maybe even about that much. But electric buses have 70 to 90% fewer moving pieces and therefore require significantly less O&M costs. And all that over the lifetime of the bus, in addition to the fuel savings, and certainly also the fuel certainty of electricity over the price of petroleum products, allows you to save that much money over the lifetime of the bus. Now, there's, of course, all these other benefits in terms of the air pollution caused by the port can be reduced on a bus-over-bus basis, which is fantastic. And really, the sort of key piece of the air pollution argument that I want to stress is that we've done research and air testing in and around diesel and CNG buses. And what's happening, unfortunately, is that the exhaust fumes from these buses are polluting the air directly around the bus and even inside the bus. So every single worker, every single person that comes off the ship that gets on that bus is going to be exposed to diesel fumes. And if they're children, that's especially vulnerable. Now, so here I am, I'm telling you, okay, so we can make it cheaper and we can limit our public health impact in terms of the air emissions of the vehicle. And finally, the third piece of this is this: there are significant availability of funding opportunities that make that price point, that initial price point, even cheaper, that only compounds the value of purchasing this type of vehicle. We've come out with reports that I'm happy to pass along in addition to the earlier research I was talking about, that details each of these, from the Volkswagen settlement to state-based plans like TERP, all the way up to low, no emissions federal grants. And each one of those is available and looks like, federally, it looks like it's even going to be more available in the coming future. So these are ways to increase that value. And keep in mind that there, again, will be an initial price point, not only of that bus, but also of the infrastructure required and probably some training for your maintenance crews. But every time you get a new electric bus, that value is going to be added, value added, value added.
Could you wrap up, please? Thank you.
Sure. And that's it.
Perfect. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's interesting you bring it up because one of the questions that I think commissioners asked as part of the agenda today was, have you looked at electric options for buses and trucks and things like that? And the general comment was, well, they're just not far enough along yet. And so I would suggest that you be part of our group that's meeting, I think, on June 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, that talks about where we can create value in the sustainability areas. And because, we already have, if you look at all of our electricity is solar or renewable electricity that we did that contract last year. And we look at hybrid RTGs and it's absolutely something that we're, front and center on. And the question is, how viable are those options just yet on a scale basis? And, Roger or other, maybe Tom, might want to comment on that.
Rick, just and thanks for the sharing that. But we have electric vehicle yard mill. We're doing those things that we're testing and starting to look into the long term opportunities for there. Same thing. What's the operating cost? What is the infrastructure cost? Which is always, an issue, making sure that we're including the cost of the charging station or whatever. Hey, we're open to look at these things, but we got to make sure that we're able to maintain them. I know you say it's easier or whatever. We need to look at the ability for our maintenance people to maintain them. But I think as we go, the thing we haven't discussed is, what's the availability of those now. But look, we'll look into these things. We're already looking into the opportunities with these electric yard trucks, and we'll continue to do the same. And I appreciate your comments.
Later in the year, we'll be publishing a ESG report that looks at some of the items that the sustainability task force is going to be looking at over the next month or so. And so we really appreciate the input and we are looking in this direction and want to be a leader in environmental stewardship. So we appreciate your involvement and comments today. Thanks. Chairman, any other commissioner comments?
I could add a quick comment.
Go ahead.
I think Mr. Scott raises some excellent points, and I'm glad his points are being considered by us. And hopefully we can incorporate some of these things into our operation. But I think his comments are very well received by me. Thank you.
Any other commissioners? Okay.
Thank you.
Eric, are we done on public comments?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So let's then move on to to section F, which is our executive, item F1 is the approval and adopt the proposed position statement on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Commissioners, we had a conversation about that. Would you like to dig deeper into that with Roger?
I was just going to ask, Roger, if I heard clearly there, I guess you're going to put some meat on the DEI and now move it almost as its own group under business equity. So I just, and I think
that's correct.
Okay. Well, I just want to say I'm appreciative of the strategy. I didn't want it to get lost earlier, but I am very appreciative of that. I think once again, we're creating more supportive infrastructure. And I just want you to know it's duly noted that the leadership is coming from the top down. So thank you for doing that.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt it.
And I
second. There's a second. Any other discussion? Okay. Do I hear any negative votes? Hearing none, the motion passes. Tom, you want to start going through the rest of this?
Sure. Thank you, Chairman, and hello, commissioners. F2 is to approve the staff selection of 11 law firms from which to select teams to advise and assist with future debt financing arrangements and public finance legal needs over the next 5 years. We know with P11, we're going to have to go out and get some public financing. So this is giving us the list of law firms that can help us with that move. We will come back at a future date with the actual teams, but this allows us to go out and start having conversations with these 11 firms to try to get prepared for that financing. So I ask the commission to approve items F1 and F2.
So moved.
I think we already approved F1, but let's, so F2 is what we're talking about. Second motion and a second. Comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, are there any negative votes? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Okay, so we have item F1 to pass and F2 passed. Moving on to commercial, Tom.
Commercial, I'd like to talk about item G1, and that is to amend the Memorandum of Understanding between Port Houston and the Panama Canal Authority. We have had a MOU with Panama Canal Authority since 2003. It is an important item for us because we do joint marketing. We exchange data. Because any vessels going through the canal from Asia are a positive for Houston. So we are good partners, and we want to continue to go in that direction. The canal, it has a five-year term that they do MOUs, so that's why we're asking for 5 years. So I ask the commission to approve items G1 through G3.
So moved.
Second. Okay, are there any questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for any negative votes. Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Tom?
Under finance, we have two items. H1 is to approve staff's ranking for a contract with McGriff Insurance Services to serve as the Port Authority's property and casualty insurance broker of record. The broker helps us continue to develop our insurance program, create specifications when we have to go out for bids, and helps us negotiate those that pricing for our annual premiums. H2 is similar to the one we just discussed in executive F2. This is for the investment banking and underwriting firms that could be used for future debt financing requirements. So there are 26 of them listed. And when we get to the point of needing to actually go and sell some bonds, we will bring a full team, both of the legal side and the underwriting side, back to the commission for approval before we move forward. So I ask the commission to approve items H1 and H2.
So moved.
Okay, moved and seconded. Any questions? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for any negative votes. Hearing none, the motion's passed for H1 and 2. Infrastructure, Tom.
Sure, and under infrastructure, I1 and I2 are associated with the infra grant that we announced last year, about $80 million. This is for rehabilitation of Barber's Cut. So I-1 is the design and planning for 87 acres of container yard, that being four and five north, six and seven. The I-2 is for the planning and design for wharfs 4, 5, and 6. These designs will go to the 30% level, which is required in the grant before we can move forward. So we're getting this project started. It's a long-term project to do all of this work. It's about a 7-year total from this point to when everything will be done. But it is going to be done in phases, and so you will see this come back up at different times throughout the next few years. I-3 is next step in our fee cap. If you remember, we've already done the inspections and evaluations of our marine structures and our corrosion system. This is to start the process of electrical and communication systems at Bayport. We have done the 10,000 foot level inspections. This gets us into the more detailed equipment inspections, and then taking all of that data and integrating it into our GIS. Again, this is the asset management part of where we need to be for future, so that when we have a problem in the future, we know where things are, we know what condition it was, and this should help us in the long run make better business decisions. Finally, items I-6, I-7, and I-8 are all the same. They are to approve MOAs with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for maintenance dredging of PHA berths. So what's going on right now is the Corps is doing some federal channel maintenance dredging, and we piggyback off of their contracts to get a better pricing when we have to do our wharves. This is all scheduled. It's all budgeted. It's a normal cycle. It just, we try to get our cycle on theirs so that we can save money. So I-6 is the dredging of Barber's Cut and Bayport. I-7 is Woodhouse and Sims Bayou, and I-8 is Jacinto Port and Care. That's the extent of the dredging, and again, those are just for PHA berths that we're doing with these three items. So I ask the commission to approve items I-1 through I-15.
I'm moved.
Sir, move.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Any questions about these items?
I have questions on item two.
I have a question. We've talked for years about considering operating our own dredge down there to do the maintenance dredging. This is a pretty big price tag to the Corps. $8.5 million is what I came up with. Does that put us anywhere close to being in the sweet spot where it would pay to operate our own dredge? I mean, I know some other ports do it, namely New Orleans, and they seem to be real successful with their operation over there. So has anything like that been considered, Tom?
We've considered it in the past. It's been a few years since I've seen a dollar figure, but at the times when we were looking at it in the past, it was deemed not economically viable, but we can look at it again. It's tough to get a dredge to begin with. There's not that many, but we could throw that back on the table and start the discussion again.
Yeah, I think we had a dredge task force that reviewed this at one point.
Just to add to that, you know, Commissioner, that's a lot of work, but that's a small amount of work considering how much you know a dredge would need to stay busy for a long period of time. But also, we get to take advantage, or you know, it's an advantage that we have being the a governmental entity to be able to piggyback with the Corps and, you know, being a part of a bigger dredge cycle where they're doing the federal channel. So, I mean, we've done it several times. It would have to be a lot larger effort in partnering with many entities up and down the Houston Ship Channel to be able to create enough work, I think, to make it beneficial. But, you know, we always will continue to look at it.
And that's my question, Roger. Is there enough work there to make it pay? You know, but this just seemed like a pretty hefty price tag here on some maintenance dredging. So I just thought it was an appropriate question. But hopefully we can take a look at it and hear more on it later.
Thanks for bringing that up.
Commissioner Meese, you have a question?
Yeah, I think it's pretty well got answered. But on number two, haven't we let several contracts on those wharves 4, 5, and 6, and now we're going to do a study? Should we have kind of got the horse out in front of the cat? I don't know. I know we spent a ton of money on it. is this all going to tie in what we spent back into this study?
Yes, we've worked on at Barber's Cut 1, 2, and 3. So we have not rehabbed 4, 5, and 6 yet. So this is the next phase, and that's why we went after this large grant, was to help us offset some of these dollars.
Good.
So this is a brand new project.
That answers my question. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions, commissioners? Okay, hearing none, are there any negative votes on items I-1 through I-8? Hearing none, the motion passes. Let's go ahead, Tom.
Okay, we'll go to operations. J-2 is to approve the purchase from Altec Industries for...
Actually, before you do that, spoke, we were going from items I-1 through I-15.
Right.
So let's make sure we get that in the notes right.
Right.
Go ahead.
Okay. It is to purchase a bucket truck for our IT group. Currently, we have a couple of bucket trucks at each container terminal. However, they're predominantly used by maintenance for the work on our cranes. So when IT is in need of a bucket truck to go work on cameras or Wi-Fi, or they have to wait until one's available. And that's not a good way to run a terminal that is highly dependent on these technological items. So we're asking to purchase a new bucket truck just for the IT group. I ask that the commission approve items J-1 through J-4.
Motion.
Second.
Any comments or questions, commissioners? Okay, any negative votes on J-1 through 4? Okay, hearing none, motion passes.
Mr. Chair, I have a quick question of Eric. It's back on 9 through 15. Eric, from a procedural standpoint, do we have to go back and amend to include the 9 through 15? I don't, and I hate to be that guy, but procedurally, Tom asked that 1 through 8 on I.
Why don't we just go ahead and do that? Let's go ahead and get a motion from items. Let's go ahead and do that just to be procedurally correct. So let's go back to item I, and we'll go to item I 9 through 15. Is there a motion?
9 through 16.
Oh, 16. I don't have 16. All right.
There's only
16. Motion?
No, there's only 15.
There's 15.
There's only 15. You have an old schedule.
Sorry.
Yeah, I thought I had the old one. You have the so we're
no,
I,
no,
have
9
through 15.
Move.
Second. Any other questions? I need negative votes. Any negative votes? Hearing none. Items 9 through 15 pass. Okay. Thanks, Commissioner Don Carlos.
I'm lawyering this morning. Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. Look, we need
lawyers. Every little bit helps, sir.
The good thing is you don't send us a bill.
Not yet.
Okay. Go ahead. Did we vote on the last item or not? I think we did.
Yeah.
4-K.
We're on people, and I apologize about the infrastructure.
That's okay.
Is K-1 is to approve a 5-year renewal contract with Pay Factors Group for compensation, technology, software, and data management. This company gives us over 50 salary surveys, which helps us evaluate over the 175 job groups that we have, so we can compare it with the market throughout the year. We also do some deep dive with another company, but this is how we stay on top of it throughout the year, so we make sure we maintain our competitiveness. So I ask the commission to approve item K-1.
So moved.
Second.
Any questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, any negative votes? Okay, hearing none, item K1 passes. Back to technology, I believe.
Yeah, PSEL has no items, so we'll go to technology M1. This is to authorize a purchase order to HP for the purchase of laptops and associated items, such as docking stations for return to work phase one. We are going to replace the current desktops for people that still have them, because we learned during this pandemic, we need to be more agile and a mobile workforce. This by giving everybody laptops will allow us to still, when we have hurricane days or bad weather days, when people can't drive into the office, we've learned that we can continue to get things done from home. So by giving everybody a laptop, that will eliminate the problem that we had during the beginning of the pandemic when people did not have technology. So we believe this is the right step. This is phase one. As more people come back to the office, we will come back and try to make sure that everybody has the equipment they need to be able to work from home or somewhere else if necessary. So I ask the commission to approve item M1.
Motion, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
Okay. Go ahead.
I have a quick question. And this is the background because of the question. The hospital district many years ago had some issues with employees taking laptops home and not securing adequately the information on those laptops. Are we going to do some kind of training for employees regarding cybersecurity and I guess safeguarding those? What I do not want to happen is employees doing like one of my sons and leaving their laptops in their car and it winding up somewhere else, because it is going to have, I would assume, some potentially sensitive information for the port. So, Roger and Tom, I'm assuming that you guys have plans for educating the employees that are going to have these laptops going back and forth as far as, you know, security or securing the laptop in some manner?
Yes, we do annual training, and this is part of it. We also have the ability, when it's a port device, one, we will do all the upgrades via the cloud. So we will always make sure people have the highest security. So when they try to get back into our system, we're protected from that standpoint. We also put on every one of these PHA laptops, if something happens, we can wipe it clean from our offices. So it can be wiped clean if it ever gets stolen.
Do we have a contact number for an employee to know who to call immediately if the laptop happens to be stolen?
Yes. The service desk. We have a 24-hour service desk.
Okay.
One last thing as well. We actively discourage and basically are locking down people putting stuff stored on the computer itself, and you would put it on a protected cloud location for data itself.
Okay.
Okay, any other questions, commissioners? Okay. Are there any negative votes on the item? Okay, hearing none, the item passes. M1 passes. We're now, I believe we do have an executive session today, correct, Eric?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so go ahead and read the statements, and then what we'll do is we'll exit this meeting, commissioners, and you should have received an email of how to get into the executive session as well. So, Eric, go ahead and do your thing.
Sure. It's 10:14 a.m. The Port Commission of the Port Eastern Authority of Harris County, Texas, will now convene in a closed meeting as permitted under the Texas Open Meetings Act and Government Code to conduct a private consultation with attorneys, including consultations regarding Kozlowski v. Buck and proposed amendments to the agreements for legal services with Best Best and Krieger and Lynette Fonz, deliberate regarding real estate, economic development negotiations or incentives, employment and evaluation of public attorney, public employees, and security-related matters. The Port Commission will reconvene in public session after the closed meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Okay, commissioners, go ahead and exit this meeting and make sure you do exit the meeting so we're not you're not in two meetings at the same time. We'll see you in the executive session, and then we'll be back after that. Commissioner Creuzzo, have you joined? Okay. We now have all of the commissioners back, so I will call the meeting to order again subsequent to our executive session. Eric, do I need to read anything or you need to do anything about that? Or are we just back in session?
We are back in session, sir.
Okay, so Eric, would you read the motion that one of our board commission members is going to make?
Yeah, the motion would be to authorize the Port Authority to amend agreements with legal services with the firms of Best Best Krieger LLP and Lynette Fonz on the terms discussed in executive session and authorize the Chief Legal Officer to do all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any comments or questions? Hearing none, do we have any negative votes? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Okay, this will, I think, conclude our business for this part. I'm sorry?
Commissioner, I have a motion I want to make.
Okay.
I make a motion that we approve the same amount for all of the outlying cities in Harris County to improve their park as we have done for Houston, that we not expend more than $200,000 a year until that money is used. Some cities will not take a lot of money and it'll take a while to work with them. So I'm not going to put a limit like Houston did at 4 years. It might stretch out longer, but we want to work with the cities that need it and into cities that are actually using 90% of our channel and impacted terribly in East Harris County.
I second that.
Commissioner, I appreciate the motion. However, because it was not put on the agenda, it cannot be acted upon as part of our open meetings requirements in the state of Texas. So while I believe that that the commissioners agree with this based on our conversation that we had in our community relations meeting when we approved and the commission meeting last time where we approved the 50 by 50 park contribution, that I think we are all supportive of that, but I think it needs to go through the and get put on a formal agenda, and then we can move on it. But we can't move on anything that's not been published in advance on the agenda that we already have published for the public.
I agree to that. So maybe we can put it on next meeting in June.
Yeah, and I think that we probably, Clyde, Dean, are you going to have a community relations meeting prior to that time?
Yes, and I would suggest that Commissioner Meeks report their concerns to the committee, and we'll get it on the agenda.
Okay.
Follow with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree with it.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we will move that to an agenda in the future. Any other commissioners, any parting comments before we adjourn the meeting? All right. Well, let's go ahead and adjourn the meeting, and everyone have a great Memorial Day and a great start to the summer. Take care.
Hopefully a dry one.
Yeah, Not too dry. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
I think everybody was in favor of it, Roy.
Mm-hmm. There we go.